Secret friends, unite!
Welcome to the Secret Friends Unite podcast, episode 471. This is your guide to the geek side, and I am one of your hosts, Todd Oxtra. Spring is in the air, and so am I, with all the pollen.
Love is in the air every time I look around. Hello, everyone. It's Charlie. How's it going? Yes.
I'm sure they hung up now.
Oh, my gosh. Well, they did get looking at your broke-ass background. That's what. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I feel a little new today because I usually use NVIDIA Broadcast, which gives me the background and everything because, well, I don't mind my background. It's just so far away that there's nothing really to focus on because it's like...
Right.
It's just hard to see anything.
It's funny you mentioned that because when we were recording our previous segment, the focus on your lens, and it's doing it right now when I said it. It's kind of jostling a little. So viewers, if you see Todd kind of go woo and get out of focus, it's okay. You are not, and maybe you are doing drugs, but hopefully not. But if you are, if you aren't, it's not you. It's Todd.
Yeah. To turn into YouTube, you can see what my recording space looks like. You can enjoy it and you can look for all the little Easter eggs.
As always, I rotate my desk around my studio. So currently I am, the door is to my right, but you get to see things, all my wonderful jackets and some other stuff on the walls that I usually, cause I'm usually flipped in the other direction. So anyway, as exciting as that is, let's get the show on the road as we always do by paying some bills and giving homage to the wonderful people who are at our Secret Friends Unite Patreon and patreon.com/Secret Friends Unite, where you can find podcasts with no advertising like this program right here. And also, don't forget, we are available on YouTube podcasts for the audio too. Over on our Friends with Benefits level, do keep in mind, for anyone out there listening to my voice, you can visit that Patreon website and try us for 7 days for free. Get access to great shows like The Spinner Rack, a show that Todd and I do about comics, a fun show that I take on called The Facts Geek Life, where myself and a guest break down a classic season of a classic genre show, and so on and so forth. But over on the Friends with Benefits level, John Sedorf, the Phoenix Sisters cosplay, Brendan Myers, Corey in HD, great fella, and Matthew Keel, also a great fella. Actually, they're all great. Excuse me. Didn't want to sound exclusionary. BFF level is our top tier. We have the awesome Nias family out there in the Twin Cities, Sean, Stella, and Henry, and your friend and mine, Missy Merchant. So we are grateful for all of you. Thank you, everyone. And again, patreon.com/secretfriendsunite, free 7-day trial. If you like what you hear, to quote Arnie from Predator, stick around, but without the big knife. Wonk. Chill out. Chill out.
Batman and Robin.
Right. Oh, man. Yeah. There is no chilling out looking at this cover this week. Again, I don't know. Let me ask you this question before we get into this. And again, this cover is from December of 1967, the year of the Summer of Love and the Beatles, Sgt. Pepper. What Google search terms do you use to find something that looks like this? I have to know.
I have to go to the dark web. No. Google image search, and I typically put comic book issue 71.
There you, and then you just, you get your pick.
So difficult, that Googling.
Yes. So this is something, I'm assuming the actual title of the comics is DC Showcase. This is a DC Comics.
Correct. It is a rotating group of stories, or like Moana Beast was one of the characters that was in this book a couple of issues.
Moana Beast, not like the Disney movie. Okay, so in this, and again, December 67, and there's very obvious influences of, you know, the British invasion, the monkeys in particular. That was the monkeys that struck me, because it's titled The Maniacs, big red background, and it says really at the top, obviously DC Showcase to the side. Fortunately, this was approved by the Comics Code, because it looks like it could get a little crazy. But it does say, who else but Woody Allen. Woody Allen, if you're not familiar, an auteur film director who subsequently was one of the first celebrities I was aware of to get himself canceled in the 1990s for reasons that we don't need to talk about. Who else but Woody Allen would mess with the Maniacs? So I'm assuming if you're looking at this picture, we have Woody in the lower portion of the cover on the left with a word bubble that says, now in my new play, Silver, You are madly in love with me because I'm such a ruggedly handsome specimen of manhood. To which she says, I dig, Woody. It's science fiction. And it's funny because over her shoulder is a drummer who literally looks like he's doing a rim shot. But yes, you have three band members that are obviously with Silver, who is the Chanteuse, the knockoff of Mary Jane Watson, or probably Grace Slick of the Jefferson Airplane, at this time, or Janis Joplin, whatever it is. But you have a drummer with a mop top.
I can tell you their names, Charlie.
If you hold on. Let me freestyle this. I got this. You have a guitarist with apparently a guitar that is not plugged in, but he's jumping in the air like he's going to do a karate kick. And to finish things off, Donny Osmond at the lower part of the screen. Guy looks just like Donny Osmond. But anyway, that's Charlie's take. Now we'll have Todd's facts. Hashtag Todd facts.
Yeah, so like I said, Showcase, it was a rotating group. I believe the Maniacs only got, let's see, I just want to look really quick.
Stats.
I only see one issue. So,
okay, just this.
Their one time to shine. And it was really to essentially riff on, to your point, the Beatles, the Monkees, that type of thing, a fake band. And the name.
Well, the Beatles weren't fake band, but the Monkees were.
But I mean, like, the whole boy band, things like this.
Yeah.
This was more like the Monkees because of like wacky hijinks.
Yes, correct. It looks that way to me.
So the band members were Flip, Jangle, Packrat, and of course the woman that is the lead singer,
Silver
Shannon.
We got a Silver Sable character in Marvel many years later who had absolutely no similarity. She was an international assassin. Okay, so which is which of the?
I couldn't tell you, and I'm not going to. We just have to guess. You know, at that point, the guy.
But one of them is not Donny Osmond.
Probably Flip, maybe the drummer because he flips his sticks, and Packrat. Gotcha.
I love this. I would like to read this. So I want you to let me know if this is, or certainly folks hit us up on Threads.
And Secret now Friends. Of Woody, Woody Allen's like,
oh, you're right.
He lawsuits brought, you know, and things like that.
Yeah. You don't. And again, this just seems like such a weird combo to put together like this, but I would love to read this. So again, hit us up on Threads or any of our other social medias, maybe our Discord, and let us know if this is something that is out there, because I'm definitely curious. But someone who if the Maniacs was a real band and there was an audience in this comic, I bet I know, because somebody who loved that Brit pop, British invasion, boy band stuff of the 60s, even though she was in her 60s, is our senior news correspondent, Madam Webb. She's the one who always hooks us up with a hunt of scoops and news. She's down at the corner of Hollywood and Vine, as always, at 124 years young. Let's get those scoops and head out to California right now.
Now it's time for Madam Web's rumors and news. Take it away, boys.
Thank you, Madam Web. Yes, your band was essentially trying to tie into the excitement of the Monkees as well. You went with a different approach, all females like Josie and the Pussycats, but unfortunately, you decided to go call it the Suffragettes, and unfortunately, you were found out as none of you ever actually voted, and you actually wanted to take away the voting rights of women. So
it was a different kind of suffering. You say, she was like, we women need to be in the kitchen. Oh, boo, Madam Web, boo. Well, yeah,
that was the first review. Suffragettes or suffering bad music? Sorry,
Madam Web. Suffering bad music. All right. So I will admit right off the top that I heard this trailer dropped. Everybody on our Discord was loving on it, flipping out. And it was just last week we talked about how April and I finally watched a Transformers movie from last summer. And I was like, and we had known about this for a long time. You and I had, because we had talked about this 6 months, a year ago, something like that. So I'm like, another Transformers thing. I mean, they just don't seem to get anything right. Is this just going to be more trash? And so I held off watching this trailer, or it just kind of skipped my imagination until this afternoon. And I got to tell you, this looks fantastic. Looks absolutely fantastic. Our main characters in this are the predecessors to Prime and Megatron. And Megatron is Brian Tyree Henry, who is one of the stars of the show Atlanta that we're watching right now. He's Paperboy, the rapper. Though in the run-up clip, he has the same hair as Sonequa Martin-Green does on Discovery with the big long dreadlocks that you see in the trailer. So I'm like, that's an interesting look for him. It is not very Paperboy. But it's him, and it's Chris Hemsworth as Prime. But Todd, you're the Transformer guy. Why don't you walk us through this trailer?
Sure. Yeah. Transformers 1, which is a riff on Till All Are One. That's Optimus Prime's famous speech, basically to bring all the Decepticons, Autobots together under one Cybertron. So basically talking about peace. This is the first animated film since the original Transformers film, 40 years. And almost, yeah. Essentially, this is going to give us a origin of basically Cybertron before the Autobots and Decepticons really emerged in a battle. This is Optimus Prime and Megatron being friends before they truly became those characters and the leaders. And we also are getting a Bumblebee or a bee. And then we are also
getting, just a letter.
Yeah, exactly. And Scarlett Johansson is playing.
Is he RC?
I think RC or Alita won. I don't know if they show their roles. I don't remember who it was. Because, yeah, typically RC is one of the females, Alita won as well.
Right.
And, they don't really have real names at this point. Like, Megatron is actually D16. They can't transform yet. And
yeah, so they're just like workers. Dumb robots. Yeah,
they're workers. They don't have anything going on. And they then discover Alpha Trion, who is essentially the main dude who basically gives them essentially the spark, which then allows them to transform.
Right. And they have juice, right? They get, abilities and weapons and stuff like Megatron. It is Megatron. He's going through and he gets like laser arms or something and he's chopping. Was that Megatron?
Bumblebee. It was Bumblebee. Yeah, I was going to do that because Bumblebee's like the sense of humor here. He actually talks in this, which
and
is
it's Keegan-Michael Key, isn't it? Because they did at the end of the trailer. They blasted through all the names. So obviously we knew Chris and Brian from the run-up a little bit that said, hey, it's going to be our trailer now. But then at the end, you blast out, got Keegan-Michael Key and Scarlett and a bunch of other people running
John Hamm as Sentinel Prime and Lawrence Fishburne as Alpha Trion.
Oh,
and,
very nice.
Orion Pax is the name of Optimus before he becomes Optimus.
There you go. I knew it was something that with the Pax in it. But this looks, I will, talk about Don't Judge a Book by Its Cover. I was very pleased we're getting this in the fall, which we knew about. So it's September. So that'll be fun. That puts it outside of our big summer movie wager, which, Todd, it's this week is the deadline. Got to start doing your guessing in the dark research because that's how I'm landing. I don't want to fall into the same trap as I did last year. But are we doing that again for the Discord? Letting people put together their own bracket.
We'll put it out there this week. And then anyone else who's listening to this podcast, obviously join our Discord. More information there. We'll probably put something out on socials about this is starting up. Go to our Discord to find out more on this.
Right.
But this one's September 20th. Perfect time for a fall film. Kids are back in school. They can go see films. They're not on vacation. And the big thing about this is interesting. The villain is a villain that we've saw in the animated series, which was the Quintessons, which are those creepy looking like aliens. They twist their head around. They've got tendrils. That was post Transformers the movie. So it was after all of the different like Hot Rod became Optimus Prime. That was that villain era. And
So kind of the because there was a season or something of the show ongoing, wasn't there, after the movie? Because of all the new characters. Mm-hmm. Wasn't Rodimus Prime Judd Nelson in the movie?
I'm trying to remember the voice.
Isn't that crazy?
Absolutely.
Oh my goodness.
Great cast, for that.
How crazy.
This is coming out. I'm very excited about this because the animation
looks
good. The action looks good. Don't love the character designs, so I will definitely not be buying any of these action figures.
Oh, I hear you. But it's just good. It's good to see something that's an intentional comedy after all of the disappointments that I know that I've had with anything, both Transformers and G.I. Joe. Whether they're trying to be funny or they're trying to be serious, it's just with the exception of Bumblebee, which I thought was a ton of fun, everything else that they've cranked, all the G.I. Joe movies are trash. All the other Transformers movies are trash. This looks fantastic. This looks like a lot of fun. So I'm enthused. For the first time.
Live action might not be the right space for G.I. Joe or Transformers.
They keep swinging and missing. So it's like, how much more do they have to miss? So just like it's not that Spider-Man has been infinitesimally better in the Spider-Verse films, which are animated, than it has ever been in live action, as much as I enjoy the Tom Holland films. It's just, it's not as good. So, c'est la vie. We shall see. Looks like fun. So anyway, well, cool. So that's in September. So what's up next, Todd? Did you ever see the last M. Night Shyamalama Ding Dong film, Old the Beach That Makes You Get Old? Do you end up seeing that one?
The last one, remember, wasn't it the movie with Dave Bautista, the three people at the cabin?
Oh, you're right. That one I thought was pretty good.
The beach movie. I never saw the Nature Killer movie. I still haven't seen Signs. I need to see that.
Oh my God, the movie's 22 years old.
I know. I just missed it for some reason.
You know. I mean, M. Night Shyamalan, again, you know, he broke on the scene in the very late 1999 with The Sixth Sense, which was just, you know, the cinema, you know, subverting expectations kind of movie, huge twist at the end. And that's been his, you know, his MO since then. But in the last 15 years, at least, he's just really struggled, in my opinion, to live up to what he, you know, how he got things rolling. And I guess it's typical of any artist, you know what I mean? But as far as really knocking it out of the park.
Split was the last one that really just like, wow, that was
kind of. Yeah. And then, he parlayed Split from an earlier film called Unbreakable. And then he combined characters from that all into one. And you're right, that was great. And so, yeah, and it had our girl Anya Taylor-Joy in it. So we really enjoyed that. But this this new film is called Trap. And Todd, the link you posted was from The Hollywood Reporter, and it was like really jittery. So I just went and watched the trailer. This is like a 2-minute trailer out there that kind of rolls through, though, that Hollywood, article from The Hollywood Reporter gave the gist of it. But yeah, it looked like some regular stuff clearly set in the city of Philadelphia, because Shyamalan never goes outside of Pennsylvania, except for you can't go on a vacation to a beach in Pennsylvania, apparently. So that's why the beach movie was in the Caribbean or whatever. But anyway, it's just a regular dude taking his preteen daughter to see a music act, which automatically made my eyes roll when they said, oh, and the performer is actually M. Night Shyamalan's daughter. I'm like, oh,
yeah.
Yeah. It's going to remind me. Shyamalan. It's going to remind me of the songs from the most recent version of A Star Is Born by Lady Gaga, which were terrible. That was a movie that I absolutely wanted to love, and I just did not. But anyway.
She's an artist. She actually sings in other things. She had a song on that
The daughter?
Show, Servant. Yeah.
Yeah. So. Yeah. No, yeah. No, I heard that it's legit, but just movie music made to look like real music just sometimes falls flat for me, because it seems very inorganic. But at any rate, so the daughter is very excited to be at this concert, and she and her dad are having a good time or whatever. And then the dad's like, I got to go run and use the restroom. And he runs off and he starts chatting with a guy selling merch, which would never happen. If you've ever been at a concert, those people are not going to talk to you. But this guy says, hey, buddy, what's going on with all the cops around? And the security cameras. And so again, it falls right into the trap of the thing that I really hate about a lot of Shyamalan's movies, is that it goes very George Lucas. And that's the way that this is not the way people talk. This is not the way people act, but it just feels very artificial. But anyway, the merch guy says, yeah, that serial killer, the butcher, the hacker, whatever it is, they think he's here at this concert. So they've set up a sting for him where there's cops outside and cameras everywhere. And then Josh is like, oh, okay. And he goes on his way, and he's in his bathroom stall, and he pulls out his phone and brings up his home security camera. And he's got a guy on the other end of it, is some guy screaming for his life trapped in his basement. So yes, Josh Hartnett is the villain. He's a serial killer. And he's got to get out of this.
Charlie.
It's the daughter. It's the daughter, isn't it? Is that the twist?
You know, at this point, it might be.
It's the daughter. She's like she's a 12-year-old serial killer. But you're right.
Do a bet on this, like to say, let's do a guess on like, okay, what is the twist in this movie right now?
It's the guy selling the merch who introduces himself.
True. Yes, I'm the butcher.
Yeah, exactly. I'm the butcher.
Might be the daughter. I don't know. You want to say?
Okay. Yep. I'm gonna throw it down. It's the daughter. It's the daughter.
We'll see if we're right. If it's not.
And this movie is. I don't have it up in front of me. This is probably also comes out in the fall, I'm guessing.
No, it's August 9th. So this will
be
a late comer. Which, you know, we've had movies that come in August that do very well. Like, Shang-Chi was the major movie that came out in August. Right.
And talk about the Shang-Chi in particular coming out in a maelstrom, because it was the end of the, in 2021, it was the end of the block on from COVID on the box office, as I recall. I don't think this looks really great, to be honest with you. I just already feel like this doesn't. My suspension of disbelief with Shyamalan is got not so great after a string of films like the Beach Movie and the one with the grandparents. I don't know, something about it. But yeah, you're right. The Batista movie, The Knock at the Cabin, was great. The Split with Unbreakable and Glass, the little kind of that evolved itself into a trilogy, that was great. I liked The Village, but The Lady in the Water, that was bad. You didn't see Signs. That one was still when he was had a lot of promise. He was really at the beginning, but yeah, I don't know. It's just the old movie was the Beach That Made You Get Old movie was not great. And the, like I said, those couple that I mentioned. So, and I just think this just I don't know. So where do you land with Shyamalan? Obviously, you're not such a fan that you've seen all his stuff.
Well, it's like I always am interested in what he's doing. Now, it's not always going to win. It's not always going to be the best, but they are entertaining. Every once in a while, he delivers something good. So his record's not great, but with him, it's like, that's fine. As long as I find something interesting, yeah, some are going to be good, some are going to be bad.
Right. I hear you. So yeah, August, we'll see. And of course I'll see it because we go to, that's what April and I go see movies. We have fun doing that, like the movies we're going to talk about here once we get into the Thunderdome. So anyway, sounds good. All right, what do we got next?
So this is kind of some interesting synergy, which I like, which is Avengers versus Aliens. So obviously Disney owns all the Fox properties now. And the fact that we used to get a lot of these weird, wacky, like Batman versus Aliens, Batman versus Predator. And now it's happening for Marvel, which I think is
Batman cool. versus it's Archie fun. Comics.
Exactly. And Archie Comics does, you know, they love every crossover they get, you know, Godzilla versus Archie. Believe it.
Godzilla versus Archie. Boom. It's over. He destroys Riverdale. Yeah.
So the byline is the Xenomorphs are coming to Earth and only the Avengers can stop them. So I don't know if the event. Well, I mean, obviously, we've talked about Batman versus aliens. I think Batman, though, was always like in space or something. So I don't know if I've ever seen there's been an alien story that's actually happened on Earth. Has there?
No, they dance with it a little bit here and there. But again, hit us up on Threads and in the Discord if we're wrong, but I just don't believe that there has been, no. So that would be cool. But this would be, I mean, how do they fit it into the timeline? Is it the Avengers going through a hole in space and they end up in, you know, on, you know, LV-427, like in the movies, and they're like, we're here too, and now there's Xenomorphs? Because, I mean, yeah, the aliens are, you know, because again, even if you look at this cover pictured here, you have Ms. Marvel, Iron Man, and Cap would be the only one who's really vulnerable out of the three of them because, you know, he's a dude. Where Iron Man, they can, you know, do whatever. I guess they could spit acid on him and stuff, but he'd be fine. But Carol's just going to, you know, use super creep power to blast him and stuff. But you don't know who the Avengers squad is that's really going to be in this unless it, I don't know that it says in here. And this really is Jonathan Hickman is taking this one on. And again, he's a gigantic, and Esad Rabaik is the artist, and he's a giant in the industry. So this is really good. Yeah. When is this coming out? If this is a limited series, I might just actually, July.
Actually before the Aliens movie.
Romulus.
July 24th. The movie comes out August 16th. And apparently, and this isn't the first time Marvel heroes have collided with the Alien Predator universe. There was a 2023 Predator versus Wolverine series.
Seems great.
That's probably on Marvel.
MU. Unlimited. Yeah. Unlimited. I would, I may actually go, go give this a shot. Yeah, this comes out. Like I said, it comes out in July for the
four issue limited series. Jonathan, Hickman, Esad Rabaik is also a really excellent artist. So this could be very cool. Yeah,
I think I might go snag this because every once in a while, I will feed the beast and read a current comic that I just don't wait for Marvel Unlimited because I'm like, this seems exciting and I want something new to read. So like right now I follow the G.I. Joe titles right now because those don't end up on Marvel Unlimited because they're not Marvel. And then, I go back. Sometimes I will subscribe to the Star Wars series because I'm enjoying an arc they're doing, and then I'll drop it. And if I get out of it, I'll just wait to catch up with again on Marvel Unlimited. But again, Marvel Unlimited for your dollar, I mean, it costs the basic one is $70 a year. And let's face it, it's the greatest deal in comics entertainment, in my opinion. I don't know how that compares to other ones, but
well, the DC Ultra, I mean, there is, they have like a core tier, which is like 6 months releases, things like that. The Ultra, why I paid for it is because, like I said, it's a month delay release, and that's like $11 a month. I'm like, you know, if for no delays, it's
cheaper than Netflix. Yeah, exactly. So no, it's good. And again, you're feeding the beast, so to speak.
I like this ironically line, though, Charlie. This is what Hickman says. We found really fun ways to Avengerize aliens and alien up Avengers. I like that.
I love it. Well, I'll tell you what, I will make a commitment to subscribing to this, which means maybe we can even talk about it together on Spinner Rack or here on the show. We'll see what turns out.
Sounds good.
Well, good deal. All right. Well, don't let me forget, because I absolutely will. All right. Well, this next story, it looks like you kind of snuck in some video game stuff here, but there's a great twist to it. Or at least the picture looks like it's video game. Yeah.
Yes. So this is kind of a fun one. So in regards to animated like comedy shows, there's some that have worked, some that don't. One theory that has not really hit yet is video game like animated like a comedy. And or sitcom, mm-hmm. things like that. And maybe that will change because Golden Axe, which is just a fun old beat 'em up from I believe that was Sega back in the day, Charlie. And
it's basically four
archetypes, like a dwarf, a Valkyrie lady, a warrior, and a mage. And they just
walk into a bar
out of things. Yeah.
Oh, nice. They kick
dwarves to get gold and have to fight things. And they've got great names like Gilius Thunderhead, Axe Battler, Tyrus Flair. Yeah. And essentially, it's just a dumb video game from the past. You know, it doesn't really have a variant. But apparently, Sega wants to get all this because they've already done like the Sonic stuff, but they want to go into the other properties. And they think the best way to kind of bring this to relevant is just basically make fun of it, make a comedy sitcom with Golden Axe, and bring in one of the Lower Deck creators, Mike McMahon, to do this.
Oh, now again, Mike McMahon, and again, sidebar, Lower Decks announced ending in its fifth season, which will be later this year.
That's good run, though.
You know what? And people are bitching about it. It's funny because we had we have meetings every month for the Petoskey, our Star Trek fan club, and it was just April and myself and another couple on Friday night, and Nicole, who's one of my board members, said, I'm so bummed this is getting canceled. And I'm like, you know, I almost don't necessarily look at it as a cancellation, although maybe that's really what it is. I said, oh, you're done. I guess we'll dig into it a little bit more in Code 47, but like five seasons of a streamer, that's not bad. That's not bad at all. I don't really know a lot of other shows in that similar spot that have done that. So it was a fun show and it created great characters. And again, when you're part of a franchise, characters will pop up in other places. It happens in Star Wars. It always happens in Star Trek. But anyway, so this is fun. Yeah, I was not at all familiar with this, but Mike McMahon, who obviously also created Rick and Morty, but he's a huge Trekker, loves TNG, grew up with TNG just like we did. And that's what led to Lower Decks being the very satirical Star Trek take that everybody in the world but Todd enjoys.
You know what? I will give it one more try.
No.
I will.
Yay.
Because I am almost done with Rick and Morty. I really have grown to really like that series, but I understand what it is. And it's not a touchy-feely show whatsoever. And the comedy is weird, but I've grown to love it. I will give Lower Decks a try. I'll take a different viewpoint. I'll like say, I'm going to forget everything about Star Trek and just treat it as it is.
Because I I really feel, and again, we've really gotten, I understand we've gotten off the tracks here, but you know, I just really feel, and other people would probably echo that Lower Decks does have that Easter egg background, like over here, but what's happening right here is just fun and silliness. That's what I think.
Yeah.
And that's what I think you'll find.
Yeah. And for me, I've had a trouble kind of realizing like, Star Trek can be sometimes different, and that's where like the characters in Lower Decks are so unlike Star Trek characters whatsoever, because they are like ridiculously ridiculous.
Yeah, they're caricatures, which
constantly making.
Yeah, it made it constantly even weirder when you took two of the characters and then transitioned them into a guest shot on Strange New Worlds in real life. That kind of actually fleshed those characters out.
And I liked them. Too. I liked them when they were there.
Yeah, exactly.
They weren't going like,
Right. Yeah. They did, you know, they really couldn't be cartoons, and they had to be real people.
Toned it down.
Exactly. Yeah. So anyway, this is fun. So where's this going to be on at? Or you said it was Comedy Sony
Central. So I'm assuming
Paramount Plus.
Come to Paramount Plus. Yep. Which is cool. And the interesting part is the voice cast is kind of fun. It's got Matthew Rhys playing Gillies Thunderhead. Matthew Rhys is the dad from The Americans.
Yeah.
Danny Pudi, the inexperienced adventurer Hampton Squibb, Lisa Gilroy, Tyrus Flair, Liam McIntyre is Barbarian Warrior X Battler, and Carl Tart as humanoid panther Cronus.
don't know any of those. Evil. Oh, his nickname is Evil. Gotcha.
I don't see a date, but probably 2025 at this point if it's animation.
Yeah. If it's in the mix. So, well, that's fun. And if it, like I said, if it's in that vein, and, you know, Rick and Morty, as we're bouncing off of that because we're talking about Mike. I've dabbled. That was very big with my son, you know, my now 24-year-old son. His birthday was the other day. So it was big with that, you know, generation. Mm-hmm. And it was like one of those that April and I just like, we don't get it. But watching it now, maybe it's more funny because it's in the vein of your Adult Swim kind of wacky, like kids be like, even maybe teens shouldn't be watching it, or, you know, just because it's too racy.
And it's full on. When I didn't realize it was like when I have really gotten, I'm on the seventh season now, which is the most current season.
Okay.
Fired the voice cast because, well, the one co-creator is a bad dude. Can't remember his name, but regardless, I enjoy it, but it is not a normal show whatsoever. It's way offensive, and it's
cool.
It's not for everybody. Yeah,
like Family Guy. Speaking of offensive, and I know that you really railed on this early this week on the Discord, and I could not be in more agreement. We are now finding out from a Marvel Comics writer that Kevin Feige, Mr. MCU himself, ordered Kamala Khan's death for MCU synergy. Now, this is something that we've talked about for a very long time. I will, however, say after that very inflammatory headline, the story that we're looking at does say there has been an update since this was published, which was back on the 16th, so several days ago at the time that we're recording this. It says that Feige's involvement in the death of the Ms. Marvel storyline are greatly exaggerated. Marvel has clarified with IGN, as an IGN article, that Ziegler's version of events is inaccurate, and the decision to kill Kamala Khan and resurrect her as a mutant collectively was made by the editorial staff, not Feige.
Sounds like someone took a bullet for the big boss man.
Yeah, I was going to say, and it was not that long ago, and again, it was probably last winter or fall, I was doing my ASM catch-up, which I talked about here on the show, and one of the issues, this is now going back probably 10 almost 15 issues in continuity, and in Amazing Spider-Man, the current volume, which I think is like volume 10, Kamala Khan had been an ongoing supporting character in this run. She worked at Osborn Industries with Peter, that's kind of the phase of his life he was in, but she didn't know his identity, and it was only in this issue where she sacrificed herself to the big, you know, the big bad of that time. Remember I was talking about Mary Jane ended up in this pocket of time where she fell in love with this dude, and there was like this Rod the Sun God who was trying to kill Peter, and then Peter fell out of it. Then when Mary Jane returned, she had this dude with her, and they had two adopted kids. It was a whole thing. I know I've talked about it, and
my
brain
just broke.
I know it's very forgettable, let's be honest with you. But anyway, throughout the mix of this, when the sun dude came and there was a big showdown in our proper time, Kamala sacrifices herself in order to make sure blah, blah, blah. But she was dead for like 5 minutes because, and again, it's mutant stuff, so you take it away.
Yeah, so it became part of the Krakoa storyline,
which
is ending, essentially. But it was just that whole thing where essentially Professor Xavier had basically cataloged all of the brain and experiences and memories of all the mutants.
He had them all on floppy disks. They were all on USB drives.
Yep, and then Krakoa could then essentially, and had some of their DNA as well, and Krakoa could just essentially bring them back with their most recent memory and bring them back. That's been the most recent thing.
Bro. that sucks.
And apparently she's a secret mutant, so when it happened,
oh my God,
she came back that way. And it's one of those things that's like, and obviously we found out in the Ms. Marvel TV series, they mention she's a mutant.
Which they can now do.
Correct.
In the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. time, which was a decade ago, you couldn't touch mutants. It was legal because Fox was still an entity. So then the Inhumans, which we all hate because of their television show, is what anyone who had naturally occurring superhuman powers, which is not even what the Inhumans are. Their powers come from the Terrigen, you know, cocaine that they snort or whatever it is, the mists. Terrigen cocaine.
The Febreze.
Uh-oh. Yeah. We're going to get some. It's Febreze. Shh, you have superpowers now. I love it.
Weird. Yeah. I mean, to your point, I mean, at the time when Marvel did not own the mutants because Fox did, they decided to basically downplay both Fantastic Four and X-Men in the comics. And so everything got pushed to the Inhumans.
Terrible.
And that was kind of their main push. Everything was Inhumans. They got the TV series. And essentially, Miss Marvel started out as Inhuman because that was the whole Terrigen Mist pod transformed humans. And it was like a big thing. It's like, that's going to be what we'd say, The Rock. There's a new authority in the Marvel universe. He said that there's a new,
Cause he thought he was taking over the DCU.
Yeah.
The Rock.
Humans are taking over the Marvel universe. And it derailed once Fox and Disney became one. Yeah. It's shifted. Mutants, and we're downplaying Inhumans.
Right, which is ridiculous because 30 years ago, the X-Men was all, you know, with Wolverine and the popularity of everything, like the X-Men cartoon, that was everything during the, you know, the golden era rock star of the X-Men time. So, fits and spurts. So, you're right. This sounds very sus, like somebody decided to come out and then somebody got in a closed door room and got their ball slammed in a door. It's my favorite line from the movie version of Dragnet in the late 80s. You know, it's just you, me, your balls in this drawer. And I feel like that's how that meeting went. And somebody got their pee-pee smacked, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and in a lot of ways, I've always said, you know, the MCU should be separate than the comics because ultimately, how many of those storylines that they're utilizing came before the MCU? They're repurposing them. And I'm fine if they use elements of that and they do their own thing. But to have it feed back in, I don't think it was creatively great. And
Because it's a pigeonhole. It's the same thing that we talk about relating to Star Wars, even though I have greatly enjoyed Marvel's Star Wars run. It is very what Lando had for breakfast last week. You know what I mean? And it's very like we're taking something small. One storyline I really hated in that run was the whole Crimson Dawn, Crimson Rain thing where everybody was fighting over the carbonite block that is Han Solo. It's like, come on, guys. You know, it's the Book of Boba Fett all over again. You know, it's just, you're digging on something that just, you're digging a hole that doesn't need to be dug. So just leave it alone, move on to something else. Keep the comics and the movie separate because it's not that there's clearly a shared audience for the two because it's guys like you and me. But there's a whole crop of the MCU, huge global audience that doesn't read comics and maybe they never will. And that's fine because that's not their jam. They're not readers. That's okay. I'm a shitty reader myself. You know what I mean? I'll get backed up 2 years on a title and be like, I got to catch up like I do with Amazing Spider-Man because you just get busy doing other shit. So you're just going to have a group of people that are never going to read the comics. So why, you know, crap all over people who that's where they live? You know, let them enjoy.
Yeah, we never see the rise in sales of comics because of the movies. It just doesn't happen.
But obviously the thought process is, well, we just haven't tried hard enough, so you just got to keep plugging away and we're going to figure it out.
Yeah, it's a weird thing, and I hope other companies don't try to do like everything has to be canon regardless where it is, because then it's just like you're just creating a trap for the next person that comes in and say, wait, I have to deal with that crap?
Yeah, it's awesome. Star Wars all over again. Oh, my God. All right, well, that takes us out of the news, Todd. I am getting out my phone, my Fuber app, my Feeble Uber app. We got to get an old-timey driver to take us uptown to the Geekeasy, where we're talking about stuff that we are loving and enjoying. So let's go.
Hey, Secret Friends Unite, let me tell you about Zencastr. We use them for our show, and now they're supporting us. Zencastr is now the all-in-one solution making podcasting easy. It's the ultimate web-based podcasting solution. It provides high-quality audio and video podcast production and hosting. With a full suite of professional tools, podcasters can seamlessly record, produce, and publish studio-quality content all from one dashboard. Being a creator has never been easier. And we chose Zencastr because of the ease of use, high quality output, And it makes it super easy for our guest to come on. We had multiple solutions we tried before, and Zencastr has just been the best fit for us. Why Zencastr? It's now super easy to record a podcast with Zencastr. Log in using your browser and start recording a high-quality podcast right away. Record studio-quality sounds and up to 4K video with your guests. Feel a sense of Zen knowing Zencastr's multi-layered backups ensure you always have your recordings in the highest quality, even if the connection is unstable. Have you ever worried what you sound like? Zencastr's post-production process makes you sound buttery smooth. It automatically removes those ums and ahs in your recording. It removes those awkward pauses in conversation too. Set the right podcast loudness and levels while reducing background noise with the click of a button. So if you're interested in making an easy, high-quality podcast just with the click of a browser button, go to Zencastr.com/pricing and use my code SFU1. You'll get 30% off your first month of any Zencastr paid plan. I want you to have the same easy experiences I do for all my podcasting and content needs. It's time to share your story. Now back to the show.
Talk nerdy to me. Talk nerdy to me.
We're sitting in the Geekeasy, cover bands playing, drinks are poured, and we are ready to get our nerd on. So, Charlie, there's just too much TV. I mean, I could talk about Fallout, I could talk about Shogun, I could talk about Discovery, but I'm really going to talk about just two things this week. Invincible Season 2, I know you haven't watched it, so I'm not going to spoil it. I don't even know if you will or not. I don't know if it's for you or not. But
someday, but as you just made the point, there's so much shit out there. So it's like, I know, I don't ever rewatch anything because who's got the time? But yes,
nobody does. But Invincible Season 2 just ended. It was split into two halves, which, quite honestly, I just feel like was a huge miss for the show because it lost a lot of its momentum, and then you come back and it's like and then I will say this, ended was kind of like a— it didn't feel like a lot of those shows, like the Boys, or, you know, they kind of like set something up and you're like, ooh, next season. Wow.
Right.
This one kind of felt tepid. It felt like—
really? Yeah.
We know something big is going to happen, but I didn't feel like it really led into it. I felt like, should there be one more episode?
It's just a lot tougher with a lot of these streaming shows that come out every 12 to 14 months or 18 to 24 months, that you're right, the momentum just kind of goes off a cliff. And that's what we were talking during the interquill about The Last of Us, which we absolutely adored, but we're not getting the second season for another like year and a half or 2 years. So yeah, my question with that is the rampant fervor of that is because we've watched that three times. We loved it so much. But so that's one of the rare ones that we just end up going back to. But it's like when Halo, the second season came on, I don't know what the hell was going on. Cause it had been 2 years, three years. It had been 3 years.
And they didn't know either, Charlie.
Yeah, I know. That's what a lot of people are saying. But yeah, you felt that this one kind of stopped short of the mark.
Well, because it had some really high points in the season. Yeah. Like, wow, this is what they're doing. And then they had one like mid a villain that they kind of kicked off at the very beginning, and then it kind of that piece ended, which had huge consequences. I will say that. But in regards to like his actual effect on the storyline, didn't do except for more of a character development, which I appreciate. It does bring out some like questions we're going, but in regards to the overall story arc, I never got this far in the comics, so it's new for me. So I'm appreciating that. They like I said, I felt like nothing was really resolved this season, and except for one part, but where it's going next, I don't think anybody has a real feel for that, and that's kind of disappointing. Kind of like, you know, you always want it like at the end of Game of Thrones every season, it's like, kind of like, ooh, that's where we're going, and I cannot wait. This one I didn't feel like at the end of the season, like, I can't wait,
right?
Because
now I feel like I can wait.
Exactly. But it's strong. It's really good. I like what they do. Characters, they've opened up a lot of possibilities. It's still brutal, and there's something big happening. It just— this season, the way it ended was kind of like a disappointment, but I still like the show a lot. So I can wait until we get more, because there is, and obviously Invincible, as long as it's popular and gets renewed, there is, I think,
Didn't they tell me plus issues? Yeah, that's what you told me. It's like in the 70 to 80 range or something. So, a lot of stuff. But it's not adapting directly. Is it kind of cherry picking its way through? Or
it's tweaking it? I would say overall it's following, but staying. Taking some bypass, kind of like The Last of Us. It's adding some things.
Yeah,
playing with some things.
Well, as opposed to the Walking Dead, where they veered off really hard in some directions. But initially, you know, they went to the first setting, and then you know they were at the farm, and then it was the prison. And you know, and then Alexandria, and then things really went in different directions. So
I don't feel like this is one they have to milk. Like, we've got to keep going, and we're going to be running out of source material.
Right.
With the boys, though, I'm not sure where that is, because obviously by the same production team. Whereas, I don't know if the boys are already out all these things. Have they veered completely away from it? I probably should check back in with the boys comic just to see, like, now that we're. Because I don't even know how much of it is canon now or tied to the show. And they're just doing their own thing.
Maybe doing their own thing's not a bad thing. So, well, cool. All right. Yep. The X-Men.
Yeah. No ding. Wow. The show is really doing a lot plot-wise, but it's also doing a lot for maturing with its audience in a lot of ways, doing some new things. And also addressing some sins of the past, which I absolutely appreciate.
Especially with me, because again, I came into that, when we watched those few episodes of X-Men 92, I was like, this hurts. I know people who are huge fans, like Aaron, who records with me over on Code 47, and he's in the region with me. That was his show growing up. And my friend Derek, who's my figure collecting partner, that was his show growing up. It was his gateway to anything Marvel, and he absolutely loved it. I watched it when you and I watched it a couple of months back, and I was like, oh my God, can I turn this off now? It was hard to watch. But this is unbelievable. It's so amazing. I'm a huge fan.
And it's funny because that was the best we had at the time. We didn't have anything to judge it by because X-Men hadn't been on the silver screen yet. We had
that was before any of the TV films.
We had bad Marvel films and bad Marvel TV shows.
Yeah, we had the Punisher by that time, the Dolph Lundgren movie.
Nick Fury.
The X-Men 92 was before that. That was in 95 or 96.
Well, at the time, though, because this
show went on in the 90s.
And it's even then. So I would say it was fine for the time. It's hard to, once again, a show that did its best to do what it did with probably a crappy budget. So this, though, they are now touching on some different storylines, which is great. Because think of Genosha is a part of the 90s era comic run going into the 2000s. That's kind of neat. Dealing with Magneto kind of being more involved as the leader of the X-Men, which is neat.
Right.
It's dealing from with the 80s, even, right. So 97 was really about, a huge change, a huge death. I don't want to give away spoilers or anything, but I really appreciate what they did. That attack that happened was amazing.
Right.
And I was like, whoa, they're going there.
You were like five and six. Is that not this most recent one that was this past week with
So six was
wrapping up the life death
and death part two.
Oh, pardon. And okay,
also dealing with Xavier.
That was last week. Yeah, with the Shi'ar, which I thought was great. We got a lot of great Gladiator. Love seeing him. Deathbird. Yeah, that was pretty sweet. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just couldn't remember, but five was the one with Genosha, as you were describing, without going too deep. And I thought it was the last. If you split it into quarters, the first 75% of it, I thought, was kind of drag ass because a lot of the dialogue was very soap opery, like the exchanges between Gambit and Rogue. I thought, oh God. And then you get into that last quarter of it, which is just explosions and all this different
it's the red
stuff
wedding, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. Red wedding.
Yeah.
So I'm like, yeah, but it was really, you spent three quarters of the, 22 minutes just like, oh, okay, fine. This is whatever. It felt like the old show where they shift gears and it's like now everybody's killing everybody. And it was wild. It was wild. I really dug it.
A thought where you thought it was going to be this person was going to. And there was real stakes. People, you saw people die, which I thought was cool. And we had a moment from, Scott at one point. It's like, he actually showed, hey, he's pissed off because, mutants are judged in a certain way, and we do anything to help you, and we're still judged horribly wrong.
Right.
And six, though, six resolved the life death storyline with Storm, right. which I loved. But they did a pretty good job with that. Although Manforge, he looks kind of, he definitely looks 90s because he's got the bad mustache, the ponytail.
Oh my gosh. Know. And is he a Native American character? Was that his Native background? American.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Yep. But he was a Vietnam vet or something like that's where he lost his leg. I'm trying to remember his absolutely. 80s backstory. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And, gotcha. And I've really liked Forge over time. I thought he's been a really cool character. Some really cool
gotcha. And his ability is he's the techno genius or he can invent
absolutely,
anything.
Yeah. He can build anything. He basically can see how circuits work in real time and build them. And he's kind of a genius in that way.
Gotcha.
Which is a cool power to
have. And so we have, go ahead, please.
Oh, I was going to say, and the second part is really finally dealing with Professor Xavier. You know, obviously everyone thought he was dead. Then we find out actually he was healed and he's going to
after a year's time. So
it's Yulandra, and then we find out, we find out the Shi'ar aren't exactly the nicest folks in the world. They want to assimilate everyone. And, it's so funny because
they're the Kree basically in the films, you know, because they're like conquering race and you think, oh, the Skrulls are the bad, where the Skrulls are the victims, you know what I mean? So he goes through this whole spiel where he said, you guys are colonizers and you go in and cut people off at the knees and tell them that they need you to stand up again. So it's just like, it's the worst of the worst. It was a stab close to something that nobody really wants to hear about, but needs to hear about. So it was a rare spot for really a cartoon to go. Cause I didn't know. Was that adapted from something from the books?
So if you look at the costume he wore, that's actually directly from X-Men 275, which I thought was cool that they brought that.
Yeah.
It's like the gold armor and everything.
Yeah.
And
so where he's walking around because he
200 era, basically, that range, which is really cool. I appreciate that they did that. And I thought what they totally did finally is, I always thought in the comics, Xavier was could never use his powers to do anything. It was like always fragile or he's like taken out. Never used.
He's like Aunt May.
He actually used his power to basically say class. When he said classes in session, I'm like, oh yeah, here we go.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Great.
And I appreciated that. But you know, then we're ending this episode with kind of like, okay, we're going to finally get everybody back together and see what's next.
He keeps talking about my X-Men. I got to get back to he makes it sound like they're pets. I got to get back to my cats. They're all over the furniture.
They're pooping everywhere. I got to take them out.
Yeah. I got my X-Cats. Oh my God. So we're getting, is it 10 episodes of this or 8?
We have 10 episodes. Yeah.
So we still got, we got four episodes left.
The big bad again is reappearing. So we have filming.
Yep. Right.
And we'll see where this all goes, but and it's got a second season already approved or greenlit, but the creator of the series who was let go or left.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
It was completed that. So everything's set now.
Okay.
Are we going to get more of this beyond that? I don't know. And will it be as good if you don't have that guy involved? I don't know.
Don't know. We shall find out. My goodness. Well, cool. And again, Disney Plus for that. And then Invincible is on Prime. So a couple of days ago, April said, you know what I'm in the vibe for? And at first I thought she said a funny genre of what she says. I thought she said I'm in the mood for a funny disaster, like post-apocalyptic movie, which I'm like, okay. But I just searched, she looked up like, what are the best 10 disaster post-apocalyptic movies? And she found that one that wasn't a comedy, but it was from 2018 starring, Peter Dinklage and, Elle Fanning called I Think We're Alone Now. Tiffany did not appear. That song did not appear. But it really has to do with an unknown, element that wiped out humanity. And Peter Dinklage was a librarian who lived in a small town in the Hudson Valley. So we're talking an hour or two north of New York City up the Hudson River. Hudson River blows my mind. Every once in a while, I fall into a rabbit hole about something related to New York or New York State. The Hudson River runs for over 300 miles from near the Canadian border to dumping into the Atlantic Ocean in the most populous city in our country. And I find that fascinating. But anyway, and the Hudson River Valley is where the TV show Ghosts is set, which is a show that we both enjoy. But anyway, he's in this little town and he is the only survivor of this town. So what he does to pass the time is he actually cleans houses. He goes into houses where there's dead people. He rummages through. He gets batteries are the main things he rummages for. So he collects batteries. He then buries the person. He has a huge potter's field of graves he's dug. And then he literally cleans the houses to maintain some sense of order. That's all he's got in control. And he lives in the library, which is his old job, and goes through and does, he takes photos from each home and he puts them in little card catalogs. Like, he's doing whatever he can to stay sane because he thinks he's the last person on earth, until Elle Fanning in a car crashes into a pole and she's knocked out with this car. She's got a gun in the car and he can't figure out what the hell the deal with her is. And it takes off from there. It's not a romantic comedy. They don't get together, thank God, because that would be terrible. But it's later in the film. They're the only two cast members for the first half of the film. And then in the latter half of the film, two people show up looking for Elle Fanning, and those are the other two cast members. I'm not going to say who they are, and I'm not going to say why they want to find her. Or ultimately what happens from there. But this was...
She's a cannibal.
No, there's no cannibalism. Aww. There's actually no really fantastical elements to this, and I just don't think you even figure out what happened. It's just that the vast majority of the population of Earth just died, because when Dinklage is walking into these houses, people are just dead, or I don't know how much time has gone by, but he'll see there'll be a corpse there and it looks fairly desiccated. I don't think it's been years, but I'm not sure. But it was very interesting for a film of its type. You know, there wasn't a ton of violence, weren't a lot of explosions. There just were not a lot of fantastical elements about it. And I dug it, and it's on Prime, which means pretty much anybody can watch it. So I'd recommend it. It was from 2018. It seemed like it was in some ways, a fairly intimate picture to be made, because it had a soundtrack largely with music from the band Rush, Canadian band from Toronto, that
not
our friend
Tiffany.
Brian Cole is a huge fan of. Yes. I think Dinklage is a huge fan of Rush. I think he had a lot of influence on this. So it's a cool little movie.
Brian's going to see this.
That's what I said. Yes, our friend Brian is a huge, huge fan. But you know, Brian hides from technology, so Amazon Prime might be too scary for him. I don't know. I'll ask him. I'll definitely ask him. But anyway, that's a fun one. And then I finally read a new comic book this week, because when you have the Marvel comic, eventually they start pitching you ads for new stuff they have. Like it'll be new
to the Ultimate app.
New. But it said the first two issues available now of the new Ultimate Spider-Man. Now that kind of threw me, because what I was trying to figure out was, you know, the Ultimate Spider-Man we're familiar with was a comic from the year 2000 that rebooted Spider-Man's continuity in a separate universe. So it wasn't like we're rebooting everything. It was like, here's Spider-Man if it happened in contemporary times, now almost 25 years ago. And so I thought, and then eventually that Spider-Man gave birth to the Miles Morales character, and that Peter Parker passed away, and yada, yada, yada. So, you know, past the prologue. So I wasn't sure if this meant that this picked up that thread and Peter Parker was alive somehow or whatever. Like, I didn't know. But as it turns out, this is a world in current time where Peter Parker never became Spider-Man. As a matter of fact, there are no superheroes at all. It is a normal-ass world of normal-ass stuff, but it's through a manipulation of time that he was prevented from becoming Spider-Man. And other heroes were prevented from ever existing because of a machination of Tony Stark from somewhere. Like, a lot of mystery. I believe the first two issues are available on Marvel Unlimited now. I don't know if they were I feel like they were moved there ahead of schedule because this just came out. I could be wrong. I'd have to do a little bit of research, which I didn't do. Sorry. But no, we see Peter Parker as a middle-aged dude who is a journalist who works at the Daily Bugle. That's how you know it's fantasy, because there's a newspaper. That's a big deal.
Photo journalist or just journalist?
He's just a journalist. He's not a photographer. Because again, Peter Parker became a photographer because he took pictures of himself as Spider-Man. It's not like that was his, you know, big, huge destiny. And he had a huge, that was like what he wanted to do when he grew up. But also at this Daily Bugle are a lot of the people you recognize, Betty Brant, Richard Fisk, the Kingpin, owns it. But one of Peter's mentor and one of his fellow coworkers is his Uncle Ben. Okay, regular character in this. J. Jonah Jameson, a regular character. He and Ben are best buddies because they're work friends going back 40 years. Really? And you learned that there was a disaster of some kind, a very 9/11-ish kind of event where May died several years back. And this first issue kind of centers around, a memorial event. Peter is married to Mary Jane. He has two kids. He's a preteen son and a slightly younger daughter. And it's pretty cool. And there's a twist at the end that is more comic booky Spider-Man-y that I'm not going to talk about, but I enjoyed it. I have not gotten into the second issue yet because the latter half of my reading this week was for our spinner rack, which we just talked about in a separate recording that you can find on our Patreon. But I thought this was pretty neat. You know, it's an Elseworlds-ish thing. Again, it's set in a separate continuity. You don't have to know anything but the most barest bones of what Spider-Man characters are, what they're supposed to be. But even if you just handed this to some random stranger who never picked up a comic and had seen a Spider-Man film and knows that, well, Uncle Ben was, with great power, yada, yada, yada. That's the guy that inspired him. I think they could pick it up and enjoy it. So, yeah, I liked it. I liked it.
Because there is going to be Ultimate Black Panther. There's an Ultimate X-Men.
Yeah. Yeah. We talked about that quite some time back. Yeah.
Is there any others?
Just these three? No, I think because if you think about it, the Ultimates back in the day, what were the real stinkers? Oh, what was the great one? The Ultimates, which was the riff on the Avengers. And then there was an X-Men and there was a bunch of FF, and they were, yeah.
Like Ultimate
they weren't great.
Something or other.
And the yeah. Ultimate. It was stuff that we talked about and I'm not remembering either. So, yeah. But anyway, I would say check it out. You know, you can obviously snag that from your local comic shop if you're a physical reader, because it's not from so long back and they would be thrilled to see it no matter where you go, but also available, as I said, on Marvel Unlimited. If you happen to subscribe to that, I would jump in and give it a whirl. So yeah. All right. Well, with that, takes us out of the Geek Easy, skipping out on the check, because I'm sure that they spit in my chicken cordon bleu sandwich, which I don't care for. But I have my Air Qantas app out. Time to get some tickets to get us down to the land down under. Hologram Tina and the mutants are awaiting us to talk about the movie double feature. Let's go.
Welcome to another edition of Thunderdome!
We're sitting in the Thunderdome. The mutants been gathered for a topic or a game to be entertained. And this week, Tina, we're talking about a double feature. So, Charlie had talked
about
Civil War.
Fiction.
Didn't talk too much about it. I finally saw it. Yeah. So it means that we can actually talk a little bit more about this movie. And then we also saw Abigail, which is new to you this weekend for everybody who's going to movie theaters. So we wanted to talk about that one quick. We thought, hey, why not? We'll expand a little bit beyond just the regular Geek Easy, because we try to only give you a snapshot. This one is movies we've seen. There might be spoilers. So if you've not seen these movies, come back after you have. Or if you don't care about spoilers,
stay around.
Because we're going to start it. So number one is Civil War. I'll give you the tagline. Civil War is a 2024 dystopian film written and directed by Alex Garland. It follows a team of journalists traveling across the United States during a civil war, which has engulfed the nation. The cast includes Kirsten Dunst, Wagner Moura, Kaylee Spaney, Stephen McKinley Henderson, Sonoya Mizuno, Nick Offerman, and Jesse Plemons.
Jesse Plemons.
So I'm trying to think here. So Stephen McKinley Henderson, he is the elderly black reporter?
Correct. Yes.
And then Sonoya Mizuno, is she like the embedded army? Not the embedded reporter?
Must have one of the one with the glasses,
that's
dark hair and glasses.
Call out because she was hardly in the movie at all.
Right.
So that's weird.
Well, and again, when you rattle through, because Kristen Dunst and then Wagner Manura, who was in, I was listening to the Weekly Planet talk about it. If you watched Mr. and Mrs. Smith, he was one of the other Mr. Smiths. That was the only other thing that I'd seen. And he was in Narcos, which I've not seen, but I've heard is excellent. And then Jesse Plemons, of course, is Kristen Dunst's husband. And he's got a great role that we saw from the trailers
in real
life. So, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, they're married? I had no clue. Oh,
I'm surprised every time. I'm surprised every time I hear it. And Kaylee Spaney, and this is something the Weekly Planet guys mentioned, was Priscilla in the Priscilla movie that came out last year. Oh, really? We watched it, and I was like, whole time I was watching, I'm like, why does this girl look so familiar? Yeah. Okay. And that was a great film too. But yeah. So,
yes. Yeah.
Yeah. I talked about it last week, obviously. So take the lead. What are your feelings after watching this? Is it too real? Are you freaked out?
So this movie was an interesting look at really journalism, like actually embedded reporter journalism,
right.
Both photo and primarily photojournalism, because we mentioned that Wagner Moura is he's the investigative journalist.
He's a reporter,
writing the stories. Whereas we don't get a lot of this in this film. It's primarily a thing of those embedded war reporters or war photographers who are in the midst of everything and get that shot.
Literally in this case, several times.
Exactly. So I like the fact that that's what this movie truly is about. Journalism, it matters. It's telling the story. They don't ask they will pose the questions that then everyone else has to answer as they read the story. It's kind of like impartial journalism. You just tell the facts.
Well, even more powerfully, and again, this is, I keep going back to the Weekly Planet, talk about their analysis, but they're right. This movie, one other thing that I really tended to like about it is that it didn't take a side.
No.
It didn't tell you that the Western forces, which is actually, those are the good guys, those are the bad guys. Nick Offerman, well, he's not a good guy because he sounds like a certain politician we're kind of dealing with in the 2024 election. Just not a great guy. But, I mean, the end of this film is tremendous, but the purest form of journalism, and again, I come from that background myself. That's my education. That's when I was a kid. When I was in school, primary school, that was something I really focused on. And photography is my background. That's been our family business for a century before my dad retired and sold the business a number of years ago. But photojournalism is the most honest type of news translation that can exist because it's an image without real. This is what you're seeing. Maybe it's just, hey, here is, like some of the images they see as they go through, like when they go to the gas station and there's an adjoining car wash where there's several guys that are being hung from their wrists, beaten and bloodied. You know, a photograph of that simply tells you this is what's going on. This is a thing that we saw. And here's the context in which we saw it. And what does it mean? What does it mean to you? Who are you? Where do you live? What does it translate to? Is this a good thing or a bad thing? So photojournalists, as opposed to what a lot of people, there's a spin on it, or I'm watching Fox News or I'm watching CNN where there's an agenda and it's being talked about a certain way. And if you're on this group or that group, you're going to see it a different way, where a photograph simply exists as a documentation of something that's in front of the person who took the picture. That's more powerful than any other type of journalism that can exist, in my opinion, because again, I did that too. When I was a student, I didn't go that route in my career, but when you see a photo, it's a thing that, assuming that it's undoctored in any fashion, this is a documentation of real life that has happened. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. This is what I saw. This is what I took a picture of.
Yeah. And they work for Reuters, and Reuters is kind of like the AP. It's basically, they are non-biased. They're just telling the facts and bringing it out there. And in this case, that's what they're going in as press. They're given passes to be part of the embed with the different groups and ask questions and do things. And just to give you some, give the audience who may not have seen this, the way the United States is divided within this Civil War is, I just put a picture
four,
in there.
Yeah, so four factions.
Four factions. And then if you think of like the North, East and Midwest is all the
regular U.S.
Basically the parts of the United States which are still under U.S. government, still trying to stay together, led by the president. Then we've got the Florida Alliance, which is just Florida being Florida.
Florabama. It goes from Florida to Oklahoma.
And then we get the Western forces, which is interesting. It's Western, but it's Texas and California.
Right. And a note, if I might, I don't know if I said this last week, but Alex Garland, in the director and writer, in response to saying, why would you create like this thing or Texas and California are on the same wavelength? And they drew it back to, when you have a despot and a dictator, the way that Nick Offerman's president is, when it's so bad that Florida and California can see eye to eye and decide we got to take this dude out, he's got to be pretty bad. So, I mean, that's what I think he chose those two states to really personify what a crazy madman this president was, which I think is brilliant.
Yeah, politically, Texas and California couldn't be further apart, but they are, right. If you think of them like the independent regions that were
added in
because of other things, also because of like war with Mexico, getting those territories. And then the last territory is the New People's Army, which essentially is the Northwest kind of.
And you, Todd, that's where you are.
And me, Minnesota.
You and I. I'm a regular U.S. guy, and as are those people in Wisconsin. But beyond that, and again, I don't feel like this
Apparently
new
you
people
get along with Ohio. So that's
Oh my God, I don't know that we get a reference to the New People's Army in the film. It doesn't resonate with me.
It's primarily Western forces. Don't really even talk about like Florida Alliance. Apparently, they were going to be not. They were kind of not going to join. We even talk about like the Carolinas not joining in. But with this. To your point, we don't get any reference to what caused this division. The president, we only see him truly very shortly where he's building up a speech talking about how, you know, things are going to change.
Yeah, this, the film opens.
Yeah, the premise is really about these journalists that want to get in to get an interview and take pictures of the president. And it's been 14 months since the last time the president has been interviewed. So they're essentially now, Charlie, where's the movie open? Is it New York? Where are they? Where do they start?
They're in one of the boroughs in New York City.
Okay.
So
they're going from New Jersey to Washington, D.C.
And they have to go in this. Yeah, they have to go into this circuitous route because I-95, if you're all familiar with the East Coast, is a straight shot from, you know, Boston, down to, you know, Virginia area at least. And they have to go around it. So they found themselves going through a lot of backwoods in Virginia, West Virginia, because they've got to get to, I think, Charlotte, North Carolina is the front line.
Charlottesville is where they said they're the front line.
Yeah, Charlottesville. There you go. And from there, our three-season journalists, not necessarily the older fella, need to push through because, again, it's our investigative journalist who wants to get an interview with the president, which really turns out to be a quote and the greatest quote of all time when the movie comes down. Because, the third act of this film, when they finally make it to Washington, D.C., is breakneck. And Todd, something I thought – go ahead, please.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, because your point, when you talk about breakneck, that's like the final act of this film is like, oh, crap. Because the beginning of the film and where we lead up to, it's a lot of quiet moments, viewing and the
reflecting
United States, seeing how it looks.
From a distance,
Some horrible things happen, some very bad, and I don't want to give everything away, very bad, like just – points of connection along the way. You've got a bad situation at a gas station. You've got a weird like winter wonderland where something odd out of the blue happens. And then you get like
Jesse Plemons into the mass grave.
Like a fun moment between journalists where they're just having a little bit of fun goofiness, and then it suddenly goes wrong. You're like, what the hell is actually happening? And not many questions are answered along the way of how did this lead.
You never really know who Jesse Plemons is and who he's with, because he's wearing a drab green outfit. But he and his buddies are wearing, you know, what looks like BDUs, but they're not wearing any kind of
the
army surplus.
Maybe they were old ex-military retired.
But their uniforms have no ID on them, so you don't know who they're with. Yeah. I will say two things about that last act. I know that you and I differ because I know you enjoy high octane fight movies like John Wick, and it's not really my thing. This movie helped me kind of pinpoint that I love high octane. And maybe it's grown up with, you know, my dad being from the Navy, my brother in the Air Force. I enjoy seeing well-executed combat scenes where you see, and I've had a lot of weapons training myself, where you see like a SWAT team move in and you watch these guys, you've got cover and this guy doing, like, I love that stuff. And I thought
they're using real tactics.
I thought that was, that was fascinating.
Doing like martial arts and things like that, where it's not tactics, it's just
very, very, but I really enjoy that kind of stuff. And something I loved about the Western forces, that's who our journalists follow all the way into the White House. And so they follow them through into Washington, D.C., Georgetown area, and then all the way into the White House, is that they're wearing very standard military uniforms. But Todd, as you know, modern day BDUs are covered with Velcro, so you can swap out patches and stuff. So it looks like they're wearing what could be a normal army uniform, but their patches are that, you know, that basically the stars and stripes with the two stars that signify the Western forces. So, you know, you feel that all these people used to be regular U.S. Army, but they switched sides. and joined, or they were part of a National Guard unit that was
probably
in California.
Probably all guard.
And
some of the bases that were within those states.
I don't know what happened there. They might have invaded those.
They might have done something to take their...
But these guys seem like they were pretty much toeing the line. But yeah, they look like they had regular Army uniforms that they just, they got a new patch vendor.
These weren't just dudes off the street, because the way they had tactics.
The way they moved.
Like that, they... Yeah.
Tactical.
And, and I think there's one part we haven't really mentioned, unless you did and I just was zoned out, but basically the Cub photojournalist who gets found along the way. Charlie, I tell you, man, what do I always say about like young people and kids? What do they typically do?
They get caught in danger and get people killed. Because that's exactly how this film ends. And again, not to dig too deep.
Slap that girl.
I know.
What the hell are you doing?
I found it especially annoying that she was a film shooter. Because she had to develop her film when they were at the refugee center. I know, it's so annoying because people don't do that anymore. That's what's so obnoxious about it.
Where can you even buy film?
But she's developing it herself, and I'm like, oh, you know what? I fucking hate you. I can't stand that kid. But in the end of it, even she does get the ultimate shot. She is the one who, and again, she's a Cub photographer who with Kirsten Dunst's character being the senior photographer who, and you get a montage scene of all, you know, places, Mogadishu and other terrible places she's been, where she's seen genocide and war atrocities and stuff. But yeah, it was as I said last week, absolutely fascinating film. I don't even give it a rating, but I would say this is definitely a 7 or an 8 for me. I thought it's a film that I would watch again, which I don't run into a lot of those these days.
Yeah. It definitely made me feel like I'm so glad this was the viewpoint of the film and not some type of like
Something that was politicized.
Whistle to bring people in and take sides. No, it was like, And, you know, if after people saw this, I'm like, hopefully they'd say, well, shit, our world's not too bad. Let's not try to turn it into something worse.
Wink, 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 wink.
And the fact that they had any infrastructure. But the one thing that I would say made me curious is the fact that Canadian money was worth a lot more than U.S. currency.
That was that's how they had to pay for the gas. Yeah, U.S. currency was nothing.
Their economy works.
Yeah, exactly. Oh boy. Yeah, don't tell Mark. We'll never hear the end of it.
Great movie. Yeah, great movie. Yeah. Glad this happened, and it's doing.
Yeah,
well.
Good deal. Good deal. So, what's your rating before we move on?
I'll probably give this one like an 8.5 because I think there were some points where I'm like, it's dragging a little too much.
The girl was the dragger. Yeah, where they're having all the you know, where they're having a camp out or whatever, watching the firefight from a distance. Yeah.
Not everything is always going on, but still, it's just like, okay. Yeah.
But very minor. Okay. All right. Well, let's move on to a movie that's not at all serious.
Now for something completely different as well.
Yes, absolutely correct. Absolutely. I'll read this one since you got the last one. We're talking about Abigail, which came out this weekend. If you listen to this on Tuesday, it was out last weekend. It's a 2024 vampire horror comedy thriller. Try to say that 5 times fast. Directed by Matt Bettelini-Olpin and Tyler Gillett, two guys that I've never heard of, from a screenplay.
You know where you have heard them from?
Oh, no, tell me.
The Radio Silence guys. They did the Ready or Not, and they also did the last two Scream, the previous two Scream films.
Oh, gotcha. The Ready or Not. This definitely had shades of Ready or Not because it takes place in a big old crazy mansion. Let's say a screenplay from Stephen Shields and Guy Busnick, based on... And I didn't know this, based on a reimagining of the 1936 Universal classic Monsters from Dracula's Daughter. I had no idea. The film stars Alicia Weir as the eponymous daughter of Count Dracula.
Really was supposed to be?
I guess so. I'm glad I wasn't the only one. But anyway, the stars are Melissa Barrera, who was until recently a star of the newer Scream films, which got the boot. Dan Stevens, who was also in Kong vs. Godzilla. He was the dude, if I'm not mistaken. And Legion, the X-Men spinoff on FX. Catherine Newton, who we know from the MCU. Will Callett, Kevin Durand, who's an actor who's been around forever. Angus Cloud, who I think was Dracula, and Giancarlo Esposito.
Angus Cloud was the kind of like the doofus driver.
Oh, the doofus. Okay.
And he actually passed away.
Right. Yeah. The film was dedicated to him.
He's from Euphoria as well, I believe. He's
okay. Yeah. He seemed like he was. Yeah. I could tell that, frankly, he wouldn't be in film too long. So that it's exactly, it's kind of exact. It was really, really kind of played straight out in trailers that we've been talking about for a long time. You have a young girl in the film, opens up with a, you know, 10-year-old-ish girl doing a ballet, practicing her ballet routine in an empty theater, which is weird because why wouldn't it be in a studio? But okay, who cares? Her father is so rich that she practices on stage in front of no audience.
She gets it reserved first.
And then she goes home, you know, her driver takes her in a Rolls Royce back to her house. And this gang of kidnappers, led by Dan Stevens' character and Melissa Barrera, manage to snag her and get out. And they take her to this safe house, which is a big, weird mansion. I'm trying to figure out the details of why this was why this was identified to our people as a safe house. But regardless, when they get there, Giancarlo Esposito is the dude who's saying the deal, like, hey, we got to wait 24 hours and we have a ransom out on this girl to her very wealthy father for $50 million, but you guys have to stay here. It's a safe location and I'll be back in 24 hours and just stay here, keep the girl locked up, make sure she doesn't see her face, yada, yada, yada. And then Melissa Barrera's character is put in charge of being the only person who's going to have any interaction with the girl who they gave her knockout juice to knock her out and put a blindfold on her. And immediately this girl started. And again, since you and I knew where this was going, it was like, okay, well.
The trailer just gave everything away.
It really did. They did kind of give away the store. So, but again, the trailer kind of had to, because otherwise, who cares, right? It was kind of a, you got to do it or nobody's going to give a shit.
I mean, so they could have like gone like completely like, it's just a heist film. We got to save this girl or we got to keep this girl and maybe her dad's coming. Maybe they could have done that.
But how and why would anybody care if that's how they painted it?
You're not selling a horror film at that point. Yeah. So if you want to bring in the horror fans, then you
kind of it's like, oh, so, I mean, right away, Abigail, who's the girl, of course, is manipulative. Melissa Barrera's character being the one who's speaking to her immediately, like the blindfold comes off. And, Melissa Barrera is trying to hide her face with the mask, but they start talking and they do I want you to pinky swear that you're not going to let me get hurt or whatever. So it's like, okay, fine. This Abigail, little girl, knows what she's up to. And it doesn't take long before things kick into gear and you figure out the truth that Abigail is a vampire, which everybody, it's funny because everybody accepts that right away. Yes. Like vampires are not what you and I see them as, like that they're a fictional creature, because right away, like Catherine Newton says, nobody told us this girl was a vampire. And I'm like, well, vampires aren't real, even though that's what one of the other dudes immediately says.
From the perspective, like there's vampire movies. So maybe they're like, just like, hey, shit like this doesn't happen in real life. So
I mean, it's great when they're trying to defend themselves. It was funny that the scene where Angus Cloud's character, who is the first to die, because obviously everybody's going to die. We just know that's going to happen. But anyway, when he wanders down into the kitchen and then is lured away by Abigail and decapitated. I did see on the kitchen table in a little a big bag of what I figured was garlic, right? And when they figure out that they've got to kill a vampire, you know, Dan Stevens is barking orders and he tells Catherine Newton's character, go down and find garlic in the kitchen. And she brings back that bag and she said, you stupid bitch, that's a bag of onions. I was dying. I was dying when that happened. Yeah. Oh my God. But it was great. Yeah. Everybody, I did have to get up and use the restroom when Will Collette's character, who was the black guy, when he got killed. So I said, what happened? She said, cause everybody, they all had names that Giancarlo Esposito gave them code names as the Rat Pack. And he was Don Riggles was the black guy. Okay.
Well, and it was funny because what's his name? The strong guy.
Kevin Durand. Yeah.
I love it when in fact he didn't realize it. And then he finally get it towards the end. Oh, the Rat Pack. Yeah. He's
yeah.
Quebecan.
Yeah, he's a Quebecan. I think you just invented a new race. Yeah, he's the Canadian. He speaks with an accent.
Acadian is the right name for like French Canadians. They're called Acadians.
Oh, okay. Is that something that Mark told you, or are you just making that up?
No, because of the whole like forts and things like that. Come on, Charlie, your Michigan and Canadian combined history class. Didn't you remember that?
I guess did not have one of those. I guess I didn't live far. I didn't live far enough east to have a combined class. I took a Michigan history class in college, but not it didn't. Canada wasn't really part of it, except for all the stuff we stole from them. Yeah. Oh wait, that was Ohio. We stole Toledo and then gave it back.
Basically the original settlers for French Canada. So that's
what we gotcha. Very good. Well, that is fascinating. So anyway, this movie was over 2 hours, which I was trying to figure out if that was a lot of drag. It seems like most films of this stripe are. They're hitting that 86 to 92 minute mark. So I'll ask you because I know pacing is often a focus of a lot of the conversation we have. Do you feel like there was a lot of fat in this that could have been trimmed?
I don't know about that because they set it up kind of like a heist film. Totally like that part when they're like going through the pieces, how they're setting it up. And then there were some things behind the scenes, like, you know, the main character, she was able to like judge people's characters and how they all kind of fit together.
Yeah. In the end of it, the whole thing was a setup. Abigail knew all of their backgrounds and she fabricated this entire scenario to get these people here so that she could kill them because this is her kill house. It's this ancient mansion with a basement, swimming pool that is full of her kills from over the years. This rotting corpse. That was one of the grossest part where poor Catherine Newton stumbles into this pool in the dark and it's nothing but corpses and stuff. And that was the most gruesome bit of this movie, I think. But there was a lot of exploding bodies and goo everywhere. This was a very almost in a lot of ways, like I said, this is a horror comedy thriller. That was the comedic part, was all of like the overage of goo, because at least two of our characters get turned into vampires and they both die through a stake, but it's not like in Buffy where they just puff into dust. Explode into they blow
big blood bags. Yeah.
They're huge, just big bloody explosions. So at the end, unsurprisingly, Melissa Barrera is the survivor and she escapes. So we've gone spoilers here. So sorry. Melissa Barrera survives. She leaves, but she's covered head to toe in brackish black red blood, just like she was an alien. I had a lot of fun watching it, but it was another one that it was April and me and the theater was two-thirds full. But again, theaters are kind of weird these days because with everything with the stadium seating and the bigger rows with the recliners, there are less seats in theaters, which is obviously fine because we don't have these giant theaters that aren't filled anymore because, movie going is very different. But we always still sit 3 to 5 rows back, so I don't necessarily know in a 10 row theater or 15 row theater necessarily who's behind us unless I happen to glimpse it when we're going in. So I don't know how busy it was or how, I don't know what this movie did. I did see a headline a couple of hours ago that Civil War held on to the lead for the weekend. So Civil War in its second week beat this out. I think that's what I read. I could be wrong, but
yeah, I did appreciate what this movie was trying to do. I mean, it essentially had some twists, which are kind of fun.
Yeah.
I like the fact that it did just wasn't like, oh, I don't know what it is. Oh, my God. And now they're like, it's vampires. How do you kill them? And then basically came down to two ways, sunlight and a stake through the heart. Maybe a decapitation could work. I don't know. I did like the fact that essentially the maker of a vampire could control them.
That was great. And that abilities. Was, you saw Catherine Newton dancing around doing the ballerina stuff.
That was but
she
freaky,
was in,
yeah.
She was in the room where the sunlight was coming through. So she was smoking.
Yes.
When she was moving through.
Yep.
Because obviously the sunlight was touching her, but in the end she's fine. Because she would just, when she's not in the sunlight, she would just regenerate. But I thought it was a cool touch. I actually kind of enjoyed that. But that was pretty cool.
I did find out the dad at the end is actually Matthew Good, who's been in a few other things.
Okay.
An actor, but you can't really find his credit anywhere near there. And it does, I did have one issue. The fact, obviously, the reason our main character got out is because a deal was made, but ultimately it's like, but she killed like a shit ton of people and she's a horrible person, you know?
Well, she's a mob. She was a mob doctor and,
I mean, Abigail.
Oh, Abigail.
Like,
right.
Yeah. It's like, I guess you're good then. You're cool. Everything's okay.
Well, I mean, you know, and again, playing devil's advocate, she did kill a bunch of mobsters and hit people. But at the end of it, like I said, Melissa Barrera's character was a mob doctor and a child abandoner, but she was like, now I'm going to get my life together and go be in my son's life or whatever. So everybody in this movie was pretty much the bad guy there because they were pushing us to root for Melissa Barrera's character and they were pushing us to root in a way for Abigail because she's killing bad people, but she still has a Olympic sized swimming pool full of, corpses and that are melting that she's used this as her slaughterhouse for, decades. So, there's no heroes in this movie. Sorry. But that's what makes it fun because, again, it's a comedy filled with over the top, gore and exploding bodies and stuff. And, like I said, everybody's an asshole, some more than others. And yeah, at the end of it, of our cast of characters, it's not a big cast because there's not that many characters to deal with. We just have three survivors. She's the most
really only one that's not a vampire. Survivor of the people who are on the job. So only one survived that. And then, so I don't know. I thought this was a fun romp kind of.
I enjoyed it for that.
Great. It's not the great next great horror film. I don't know if they could go anywhere with this because what are they gonna do? You can only do this premise once and really make it work. So
it's not going to come back for a sequel. Cause again, it's not like this was making big bucks this weekend, but yeah, you're right. There's nowhere for it to go. They shot their wad as it were. There's really nowhere for it to go. And that's fine. That is absolutely fine. So, well, cool. All right. Rating for this, as far as doing the rating it for what it is, I think is probably the best way to swing. I'm going to say it's a 6.5,
Probably 7 out of 10. I was entertained.
I was entertained. We had fun, and ultimately, when people try to get too bound up about, what does it mean, and blah blah blah, it's just the famous quote of the story that Harrison Ford, it was a quote that he said back to Mark Hamill in regards to the trash compactor scene in Star Wars. Apparently, Mark had said had ad-libbed on set or after the fact said to George Lucas, hey, if we're getting out of the trash compactor, wouldn't our hair still be wet? And Harrison Ford leads in, I always love it when Mark Hamill does this voice, he says, it's not that kind of movie, kid.
You're paying attention to your hair.
Continuity is not legit. So anyway, fun flick. Well, this was fun. This is the first time we've done a double header talking about current films. So this was neat. I think that we should when the occasion pops up.
Well, when we take this on again. Two films back to back.
Like that.
Yeah. Definitely. Because some films don't deserve a lot of time.
Get a shout, but yeah, exactly. So, well, cool. All right. Well, folks, that is the show. Thank you as always for joining us. Todd, where do people find you out there?
They can find me primarily on Threads at TOxtra, at Secret Friends Unite, and check out our Discord. There's always more discussions and more fun to be had there.
More fun to be had. And as always, Todd, you mentioned visit our Secret Friends Unite link tree with all of our links to all of our stuff. That's where you can get in there. I myself can also be found on Instagram and Threads. C3 Carpenter, go ahead and spell it out. Spent a heck of a lot of my time hanging out with my cronies at the USS Grand Petoskey. We're one of the biggest chapters of the International Star Trek Fan Club, Starfleet International. We're based here in West Michigan, but we have chapters all over Michigan and all over the world. I'm actually very privileged to head up Region 13, which is Michigan and Eastern Canada. If you are a Trekker in that sphere or elsewhere, sfi.org or ussgrandpetoskey.com, you can find me, send me a note, and I will help you find Trekkers wherever you're at. So with that, friends, one more time, thank you for joining us. I'm going to tell you that sharing is caring. To keep on trucking.
Be the hero, not the villain.
In a truck.
At truckersonly.com.
This podcast is part of the Secret Friends Unite Podcasting Network. Visit SecretFriendsUnite.com for more great shows, articles, news, reviews, and more. Secret Friends Unite podcasts are available on Apple, Google, Spotify, and other podcast services around the world. If you'd like to be part of the conversation, you can join us on Facebook or our new Discord server, or follow at Secret Friends U on Twitter. Please subscribe to Secret Friends Unite on YouTube and visit our merch store at tpublic.com. Just search Secret Friends Unite. Thanks for listening.